Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hi, it's Jackie Cation, and you are listening to the Dork Forest. The website's jackiecation.com, dorkforest.com, thedorkforest.com if you like a determiner. Let's do the credits. Patrick Brady's going to fix this audio and video. Vilmos works on JackieCation.com. And Mike Rickberg sang the song with his wife, Sarah. He composed it, and he will sing his version of the Mexican hat dance at the end of this show. Thank you so much for listening to the Dork Forest. Here's a scoop. I'm doing stand-up online. A lot of Zoom shows will eventually go back on the road. Sign up for my email list. It's easy to get off. It's harder to get on than it is to get off. And no harm, no foul, if ever bored. JackieCation.com. Sign up for the email list. You'll find out about my weekly Zoom shows and stand up on the road eventually. You may donate to the show if you would like. I would like. Sure, I would. There's PayPal, Jackie@JackieCation.com, and there is a PayPal button on both DorkForest.com and JackieCation.com, and there's Venmo if you like Venmo, Jackie-Cation, oddly enough. If you have listened to all of the shows, go to dorkforest.bandcamp.com, I think. The Dork Forest has a Bandcamp page. You can listen to a lot of ones that are free from pre-2009 when I started pre-recording. And then there's live episodes that cost me a couple of bucks, so I charge you a couple of bucks. There's also some stand-up. There's a story album that's very exciting there. And other than that, I have a lot of merch in my garage. Feel free to order if you know anybody who doesn't have any CDs or the DVD. And you can follow me everywhere at Jackie Cation. Let's get into the show.
Hey, Jackie Cation here. Very exciting. We have never met, but you do music and you do comedy and all the things. And it's at youngsouthpaw.com. I'm going to assume you're left-handed. Welcome to the program, Og Stone.
Thank you, Jackie.
There we go.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too. And it's at Og Stone on Twitter, but it's at Og X Stone on Instagram, correct?
Somebody took Og Stone and they haven't used their Instagram in like a decade. And I tried to reach them to get, you know, Og Stone as it was, but no response.
You know what? There's a certain amount of street cred having that X in there that brings that. And if I can think of anyone who doesn't have any street cred, it's you. You need all the street cred. I've been watching some videos. I've been listening to some songs. You got a band camp with a pile of albums and stuff. And that's just sort of youngsouthpaw.bandcamp.com. Does that sound right?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
And it is a pile.
Yes, it's a pile of albums. And so go to Bandcamp and check them out, you guys. And then Part of an Hour is the name of your podcast, right?
The Young Southpaw Part of an Hour. Yes.
Oh, The Young Southpaw Part of an Hour. Okay, Rangers, that's it. Yeah, let's do the full title. But it's so that's all of it, just so people can find you again, because people will enjoy your dorkdom. We have not spoken of this dorkdom in quite some time, Og Stone. And it is James Bond. Dun, dun, dun.
Yes.
Or I should have said Bond James. I don't know a lot about James Bond. So.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, you're in for a treat.
I am in for a treat. I saw that movie with the guy without a shirt.
Casino. That one, yeah.
Yeah,
the James Bond movie.
The James Bond movie where the guy doesn't wear a shirt and his name might be Daniel something, an actor. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
There's yeah.
A lot of that.
Uh-huh. So, James Bond are books and they're movies. Which one are you? Which are you a fan of? All of it?
All of it? Though I'd have to say I prefer the books.
Oh, that's cool.
They're less, the movies can get absurd. I love the movies. But there was a long time period where they were, you know, just kind of womanizing and no real plot. I love Roger Moore. I think he's a fantastic actor. When he was the Saint, he was a lot more like James Bond than he was when he was James Bond. Because for lots of the Roger Moore movies, they're just one-liners. They seem like excuses for him to have a one-liner.
Right, right. I have to say that the movies seem to be a lot of dick jokes.
Yeah.
But the books, I don't think, the books are serious.
Yeah, serious spy novels in which, you know, the women are, especially Moonraker, which I love, Galibrand, who is the heroine in that, she saves the day just as much as James Bond. And it's a great read. It's gripping. Whereas in, you know, the movie of Moonraker, they're going to outer space and like, you know, it's just a bunch of dick jokes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So, but Moonraker, that one's one of the earlier ones, right?
That's like a, I think it was the third book. It was an early book and it's one of the middle movies. It was 1979.
Okay.
Great theme song.
Sure. Is that Paul McCartney?
That's Shirley Bassey, who did a few of them. And it's a lovely theme song. And I had a theory for a while, which can be debunked because there are exceptions, but that the worse the movie, the better the theme song. Like A View to a Kill, the Duran Duran one, great theme song. But you know, Roger Moore was, I think he was 54 in that one. Not the sprightly young secret agent.
Yeah, how old is he? Is the first book Casino Royale?
First book is Casino Royale, yes.
Okay. And that was written in the 50s, right?
Yes. And strangely, they never did the movie, the Daniel Craig movie was 2006. And there wasn't like a regular Bond film with Sean Connery or anything. There was the spoof with like Peter Sellers and those guys. But it was odd that they didn't, you know, start with the first one. But film was Dr. No.
Oh. Which for many years, and this isn't. Apropos of anything, I got Dr. No and Dr. Strangelove mixed up, the two movies, two very different movies, but both Dr. Strangelove, much more serious, weirdly enough, than Dr. No, I think. So James Bond he's a guy with a license. Does he have a license to kill in the books?
He does, yes. He is in the 00 section, which is the section with the license to kill.
Okay.
And there's only like three or four of them.
Okay. And so there's three or four 00s. Hmm. And it's at their discretion. They can just, they're like, oh, this needs lethal force. I can murder somebody.
Yeah. And I think Bond is very conscientious of the fact of what it means to take somebody's life, even if it is an enemy. And like you can see, especially in the Daniel Craig films, how this haunts him.
Okay.
Like the reason he drinks so much and, you know, tries to drown himself with women and alcohol is, I think, it weighs heavy.
Yes. Yes. Nobody ever drowns themselves in good works. It's always weird. Nobody's like, you know what I got to do? I gotta feed the homeless. And
be an entirely different Bond film.
It really would. It would be a Bond film where you're like, nah, I just got to go get laid. And And literally, we're talking about 11 minutes of Circe's. I mean, it is not like, it's not a long, I mean, maybe some tantric sex, you know, if you decided to get into like an 11-hour sting kind of situation or, you know, the Kama Sutra.
We should write this, you know, tantric sex Bond film in which he decides to feed the homeless when he's done with all the tantric sex.
Right. Those are two different books, Og. Those are two different kinds of characters. Right, right. Maybe it's a 009. And one of the 00s that has decided to use his haunted presence for good instead of...
The 0069, who's like right below 007
wait
in the pecking
a minute.
Order.
And so what do you reread them? Are they a pretty good reread?
Yes, I read them when I was a kid. My introduction to Bond was, I remember I grew up in Connecticut and my extended family were very close. We'd always go on vacations together. And one weekend we all went down to Atlantic City. Mm-hmm. You know, it was less than 2 hours away. And like all the adults were gambling and having a good time. But my older cousins, who were probably, you know, early teens, they were babysitting and I was 8. And I remember we were just flipping through the channels. And then there's a scene of, you know, a bunch of men clad in black just skiing down an Alp and this really awesome music. And like all my older cousins stopped and was like, we got to watch this. And I was like, what's this? And I'm like, it's James Bond. And it was on Her Majesty's Secret Service, which to this day remains my favorite book, film, and theme song.
Oh, okay. And theme song. All right.
Yeah, it's such a cool theme song. and it's an instrumental too. It's John Barry and it's just rad.
Oh, okay.
But like the and like I watched it and I was just completely, I hadn't seen anything like it. And plus my older cousins got me into like lots of cool stuff. My introduction to like all the music I listened to, like Van Halen and everything, came from their excitement about things. So like when this happened, you know, being an impressionable 8 years old, I was like, wow. And then I got so into it. And, you know, on Her Majesty's Secret Service is a strange introduction because it was right after Connery left. It was George Lazenby, the only film that he ever made. Okay. So I have like an affection for him, although most people don't really rate him that highly.
I've never even heard of him.
He was an Australian model who somehow got the Bond gig.
Okay.
And then didn't really play ball with the organization after it was released. Like he grew a beard and got into sort of like hippie culture, whereas, you know, that's not what they wanted from their James Bond.
They had watches to sell. Yes. And so what was his name?
George Lazenby.
Wow. I kind of want, whatever happened to him? Do we know?
There are some, I think, YouTube things, whatever happened to George Lazenby, and I've always meant to watch, but I know enough about like when he was finally replaced and then Connery came back for Diamonds Are Forever, the next film.
Okay. Well, what happened? So he grew this beard. Wait a minute. Pardon me. A quick PSA while I read you a paragraph from the George Robert Lazenby Wikipedia page. 1939, you guys. An Australian actor and former model, the second actor to portray James Bond. And he played the character on Her Majesty's Secret Service, 1969. Shortest among the actors. He was also the youngest actor. He was 29. And he was a non-Brit, the only non-Brit. Yeah. Okay. Later. Go ahead.
What's interesting about that is, like, before Daniel Craig, all the actors came from a different territory of Britain. Like, Connery was Scottish.
Okay.
Lazenby was Australian. Roger Moore was English. Mm-hmm. Pierce Brosnan was Irish. And Timothy Dalton was Welsh.
Oh, do you think they did that on purpose? They were like,
no,
we're going to.
No, not at all.
No, not at all.
but it is a curious fact, I think.
It is a curious British. They went to the colonies. So was there ever an American cast?
No, but there was talk of it, which I just don't think would be right.
Well,
I can't see it.
Right. You know, Cumberbatch, he's played everything else. It'd be a weird thing for him, for Sherlock, Doctor Strange, Benedict.
Is he actually American?
No, but he does an amazing American accent. So I was just like, if he played him, but with an American accent, that would actually kind of crack me up. Because it would be another parody though. So
I think, well, in his younger days, David Lee Roth should have done it. That would have been fantastic.
David Lee Roth of Van Halen?
Of Van Halen, yeah. It's combining my two great loves. I mean, can you imagine it? Just like that high energy, you know.
Right. He went solo, if I remember correctly, after Van Halen. Did he not?
First concert I ever saw.
Oh, okay.
I was 10. And actually, the 1984 tour, I was 8. And my older cousins, again, who I mentioned, got me into lots of cool stuff. I remember my cousin Keith calling up my mom and like begging her for me to come with them to see the 1984 tour. My mom, you know, is like, no, he's 8 years old.
He's 8 years old. You're going to take him to a rock concert? Yeah.
But then 2 years later, David Lee Roth went solo in his first solo tour and Keith called my mom up again and she let me go. And, you know, it just changed my life.
Oh, yeah. I think we all think that there's going to be, that concerts are going to be full of drugs and sex and stuff like that. So you don't want an 8-year-old. Little do you realize it's just going to be eardrum damage. It's so loud. It's so loud. Nobody's handing it. I mean, especially not your cousin, you know, or not. I would assume, I mean, there are some cousins that would hand you a joint. They did not. Yes. But it's like, those are different. If you are raised in the family where your cousin does hand you a joint, your mom is also like, yeah, go. I got work to do myself. So,
they were very drunk though, you know.
Oh, the cousins
I met them there with another cousin of mine and like Ethan, his friends were very, very drunk.
The first concert I ever saw, there were four of us and there was one six pack. Oh. So, we all, We had like 1.5 beers each, and it was pretty lame. And but it was REO Speedwagon and the World Series of Rock.
Oh.
April Wine opened up for him, you guys. I don't know anything about music, and I date it to that very moment because I didn't know what I was seeing. So, but Van Halen, if he would have played James Bond, and it was the 80s, it would have been, he would have gotten, he would have had to have a haircut, right? Didn't he have very wild hair?
He did. This is a very good point. I hadn't thought of this before. I guess I just assumed he would sort of tuck it into some sort of hat or something.
Van Halen, it would have been David Lee Roth with a man bun, just ahead of the curve. It's cool. So the books themselves, though, are short, right? I mean, they were those pulp size, like 220s, right?
Yeah. And Ian Fleming said his job was to get people to turn the page. He wasn't interested in being, you know, literary. It was just to get people turning the page. And actually... Oh. When you asked me about the books and movies initially, and I started into my story about Atlantic City, I then, a couple years later, you know, you bring books into school to read, and I brought in On Her Majesty's Secret Service, and the teacher called my mom and didn't think it was appropriate.
Wow. Because you were 10 at this point, right? And she just thought it was too... I think your teacher had only seen the movies.
Probably, because, like, yeah, there was that sort of stigma, and Kingsley Amis, who... wrote the first Bond continuation novel, an author I really love, he pointed out that on average in the book, there is really only one seduction per book.
That's true of the Jack Reacher novels. He usually gets laid right around page 450, 445.
The Jack Reacher novels? I'm not familiar.
Yeah, the Jack Reacher novels are, essentially, he is James Bond, except for that he's a mug, right? There's no glamour to it, right? He was a military police guy, and there are movies. Tom Cruise famously did a mediocre job playing Jack Reacher in a movie because Jack Reacher is supposed to be like 6'7" and amazingly athletic. And Tom Cruise is very agile for a guy who's 5'5", but he's, you know, much, you know, he's not the same physical presence that the character, but it's interesting. I will weed off Ogstone, by the way, into books that I've read that remind me of books that you've read.
Awesome. I love talking about books.
But I want to know, was he the smooth, suave guy in those early, like, was he a tuxedo guy?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was totally suave.
Okay.
Yeah, not in a different way than the films, but yeah, he's
really?
Definitely a gentleman. Yeah.
Right. How different? Like obviously not smug. Like Roger Moore played him as pretty smug.
Right. Yeah. Not smug.
Okay.
Just, you know, he's a secret agent in the 50s, 40s, 50s doing his job. You know, that's, you know, you dress a certain way. You have a health regimen and, you know, you're.
Right. You got to get those sit-ups in. Joe Pilates just introduced. So the. Got to work on your core so that you look good in a tux. But because he's a spy, he's got to blend in. And I've never thought of anyone who doesn't blend in more than James Bond. Like, what kind of spy is that, right?
True. I guess David Lee Roth as James Bond would be the epitome of this.
Right? I could just see David Lee Roth just showing up going,
"Hey, man.
No, I'm Bond. James."
He's on roller skates. He's raring to go. He's got, you know, his spandex on.
There was a guy named John Bush who did a joke that Keanu Reeves as James Bond, and this was Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. This is back literally in the early 90s. And he did a joke and he did an impression of what Keanu Reeves would be as James Bond. And then he did an impression of that, which would be, "My name's Bond. Jamie Bond," and which was funny at the time. Obviously, I've remembered it.
Yeah.
But that's, I think, what David Lee Roth would be. You know, more surfer guy. Going, "Hey, man." But how did he? Like, everyone must have known that he was a spy in the books. No.
He assumed lots of different identities, and I don't. I guess he had to have an Honor Majesty's Secret Service, which is, I think, commonly regarded as the best book. He does have some facial alteration, like to make him, he has to go into Blofeld's lair, which is on top of an Alp, and he has to look like Sir Edmund Hillary, I believe, who is like this expert on heraldry, because Blofeld, this arch villain, is trying to get, what's the word I'm thinking of? Acceptance by claiming a count title.
Oh, okay. Oh, so he's trying to do providence to say that he's a long lost heir of some countship or something. So he's got to be, we're here to see the tapestries, Indiana Jones kind of thing. And so he's supposed to be that guy.
Yes. Yes. Sorry, I was about to go off on another tangent because there's a Southpaw story.
Oh,
my
please,
own Southpaw stories
it.
Are basically a premise and then just going off on wild tangents. Like, what if Bond, Raiders of the Lost Ark, and David Lee Roth were combined in a film? What that would be like? Because again, Indiana Jones, another huge thing growing up. Raiders of the Lost Ark, I would probably say, is my favorite film of all time.
It's incredibly well done. It's enormously well done. I tried to watch Temple of Doom the other day because I bought the 3-pack. Does not. Turns out, even at fast forward, there's probably 3 or 4 good scenes. And
my friend Mike sort of took that, you know, when they're eating the bugs and the monkey brains.
Yeah.
I think he saw that as a kid and was just like, this is what I'm going to do with my life. Because he's been at restaurants and like ordered pigs' intestines like just to try them, and then like the chef had to come out this one time and say, "Have you had these before? You know, there's going to be a certain smell with pig intestines.
Right.
I just want to make sure you're prepared." And Mike's just like, "Nope, and this is what I do."
That's interesting. It's always fun when you go to, and it's usually a non-Whitey Magoo ethnic restaurant, and you order something that clearly they're like. I used to work at a Chinese restaurant, and the way they put it, very subtle. They would say, Americans don't like that. And you're like, just say it. You're just like, you think that it's too spicy for my pasty self. And I'm like, I want to try it. They're like, you better pay for it in any case. So I'm like, I promise to pay for it, even if I don't finish it. And
you've
so good
sick
for
all
him.
Over your table.
Exactly. I won't get sick. I'll have one bite, and then I don't have that kind of pride issue. My pride issue is I want to give you $13 for something I'm not going to finish. And so.
Did it blow your mind that Temple of Doom is a prequel?
It just did.
Right?
I did not know. I did not know that. Ladies and gentlemen, Augstone has blown my mind. Really? It is? It makes...
It's only by the caption at the very beginning. It's stated like 1935, whereas Raiders is 1936. And I didn't realize this till like however many viewings in. I put it on one night and I saw that. I was like, wait a second. This changes everything.
It really does. And it means that he does have better taste in women. Because Spielberg's wife, not my favorite. And granted, when you are cast as such a person, a damsel in distress, sometimes the director will say, scream. And she was clearly told to do a lot of screaming. Yes. And because it was terrible. It was too much. I don't like it.
Well, I always read that, you know, script should have like a lot directors like lots of white on the page. So there are probably just some pages that just had the word scream on it.
Just scream. Just scream and pretend you're... And I don't know how scared what you do when you're scared. And I do. I do. I scream when I'm scared, but I mostly swear. So I don't know what... like. And the best example of just sort of a controlled experiment in terror, let's say, because I don't do scary things very well, but haunted houses. I once went to Knott's Scary Farm, which is 30 different haunted houses at Knott's Berry Farm, and they have dry ice, so it's all in fog, and they have people in character who just fucking bother you, and it is genuinely anxious. I'm just anxious the entire time I'm there. I'm just like, isn't there a safe space? Isn't there? Can I? You know, and there isn't, or if there is, This one never found it. And literally, I went to four, because there's 30. I went to four of them. I'm waiting off, but I went to four different haunted houses. And by the fourth one, they had tried to ruin everything from my childhood, from dolls to old toys, like all the different haunted houses had a different theme.
REO Speedwagon?
Yeah, REO Speedwagon. Right. You were just like, is that April Wine in a cage? Anyway, so, but the, so I went, I was like, you guys keep going. See however many of these things you want to see. I'm going to go sit on a bench. So I'm sitting on a bench and there's ice fog, you know, the dry ice fog around me. And all of a sudden there's a dude standing right behind me and he's just an actor. And I was like, I don't approve of any of this. But I wanted to scream, but all I did was start swearing. And, it's like on roller coasters, I swear. I don't scream. I just tend to just start a mantra of fuck, fuck, fuck. I'm going to die. I'm going to die. Screw this. And it goes like that. So whenever, and this is the last thing I'll say, is whenever I'm on a roller coaster and it's like there's like three people that have gone to the park. And so I sometimes would end up sitting with a child or a stranger. I would always warn them before we took off. I'm like, I swear. I am so sorry. If this is genuinely scary, you will just hear me swearing over here. Some poor 8-year-old. Okay. All right.
Picking up lots of new words.
And adding some to my own. But so, yeah. So I didn't. Temple of Doom is a prequel. Getting back to it. That's Ooh. Insane.
Right.
Yeah. Have you read up on that at all? Or did you just notice it and go, that just blew my mind. I don't even know what to do with that.
Yeah, basically. And then I think I posted on the internet about it. This was like 10 years ago. And everyone was like, I think you're making too big a deal out of this. But some people got it. Like,
oh, you are not. This right? is, I will be going down a rabbit hole after this podcast to figure out what the hell.
And then the next Indiana Jones movie ties it back to Bond because we got Sean Connery coming in as his father.
It's true. Yeah. That one might be my favorite Indiana Jones movie.
Really, it's a really good movie. I love that one, too.
Yeah, it's a really good movie. And holy grail, you know, I'm always on board whenever there's some sort of weird Bible crossover. The scariest movie I ever saw was The Omen. And that was all Bible-y, too. And you're like, no. But I can't. I'm not psyched. But it is always kind of fun with the Holy Grail and the chalice. I often say, that's not the cup of a carpenter. Just in conversation.
Just in everyday life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And do you like Raiders better than Last Crusade?
I do. Yeah.
Okay.
And it's hard to untie it from the nostalgia factor of, you know, being 5 years old and seeing it in the movies and just like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I have to. Though, yeah. I have. Go ahead.
Speaking of scary stuff, Raiders is tied into something with me in that when I was like a few weeks before that, we used to have lots of like just garter snakes in our yard, and my dad picked one up by the tail and it like curled up and bit him on the wrist and like he was bleeding. And I watched all this as like a 4 or 5 year old, and it instilled a fear of snakes in me. And then I go to see Raiders a few weeks later and I was just, you know, terrified.
You're like, you are correct to be afraid of snakes. And did you see young Indiana Jones when we find out? Well, actually, that's at the beginning of Crusade. When how we find out why he's afraid of snakes.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's that whole train thing. Because who was it? Who played young Indiana Jones? I'm spacing. He died.
Yeah, it was.
It was
River Phoenix?
Yeah, it was River Phoenix because Joaquin has got a cut lip. And I'm super sensitive, you guys. If you're watching the video, which is on YouTube. By the way, I am talking with Augstone. If you ever want to find Augstone, it's at Augstone on Twitter and at AugXStone. You actually have Augstone.com.
I do, yes.
And YoungSouthpaw.com. And Young Southpaw, Part of an Hour? What's the full name of the podcast?
The Young Southpaw, Part of an Hour.
There. Let's weed off briefly to talk about this name, Young Southpaw. What? Why? What's happening? Are you lefty?
I am not technically lefty, though I bat lefty and play hockey lefty, neither of which I've done in probably 30 years. occasionally I've read about like stimulating your creativity and they tell you to like use your opposite hand. So I'll try and write and draw lefty, which okay. is cool because I have like a different sort of line when I do that. And I used to brush my teeth like way too hard and I've like the gums have like really gone back. So my dentist told me you should definitely be brushing with your opposite hand. So I brush my teeth lefty.
Oh.
The name came from.
Yes.
Do you?
Yes. I'm slightly ambidextrous, but only in random weird things like that. I brush my teeth left-handed and I dribble a basketball, which I also have not done in 30 odd years, with my left hand. But so what, but continue.
Okay. Please. So, 2017, I lived in LA and I loved it, but it's expensive and I quit my job and I was still making music at that time, but,
right.
You know, it wasn't really going to my satisfaction. I decided I was going to move to Nashville where okay. it'd be cheaper and I could make more music. And I did right. this kind of by way of Florida where my family has a place. I drove out from LA to Boca and spent a couple months kind of regrouping. And then I drove up to Nashville in May. And like in the past 5 years, I've crossed the country, I think 5 times on my own. And okay. when you do that, you tend to talk to yourself a lot in the car. Just so you, you know, I was going to say, so you don't go crazy, but you go a bit crazy. And I remember I just started recording this stuff that I was saying. And like, for some reason, my voice has always adopted a Southern drawl at points for reasons I can't explain, but friends have pointed this out over the years. So mm-hmm. I started emphasizing this and I start recording while I'm driving on my phone. I'm driving up, you know, like through Georgia to Tennessee. And I realize I have this story going and I start thinking about, you know, this is like something I'd like to pursue. And I started thinking of a name and I was also listening to Carl Jung, the Swiss psychoanalyst, one of his sure. audiobooks at the time. So Southpaw is literally as dumb as that. I was driving through the South and I yeah. thought it was a cool name, but I was like, I can't just call this character Southpaw.
Right.
But then I had the Jung thing and I was like, well, I can't call him Jung with a J, but Jung Southpaw has like a cool sort of ring to it. I thought
right?
I was like, let's go with that and see what happens.
Sure. See how long that lasts. And
it's been 3 years.
It's been 3 years of youngsouthpaw.com. Which Jung were you listening to? And was he reading it? Because didn't he die in the 50s?
Yeah. I think there is like a recording of him like giving a lecture, but it was definitely someone else reading.
Just an audible kind of situation.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was like Psychology of the Unconscious. I'm pretty sure it was that one because I hadn't read his autobiography yet, which is super interesting.
Well, that's interesting. It's I like Carl Jung. You know, one of the things I like about him is that he was like, there's more to psychology than Freud, right? I mean, their split was just like, no, I see what you're doing. But I think that you're going down sort of a blinders, kind of a narrow path. And I think that it could be also, there are other ways than just psychoanalyzing, which is one of the things I like about Jung. He was willing to like sort of admit that there was philosophy and religion and other things besides just science. And he was interested in the science that you could apply to the brain, but he was also willing to go, I don't know things.
Yeah.
You know, the universe is larger than, you know, even science is larger than everything we know. I mean, that's one of the draws, right?
Yeah.
So.
And that, you know, there are objective things that there are things I'm experiencing that I can't explain. And it's the same with everybody else.
Yeah. Yeah. So we have gone so far away from James Bond, but that's all right. We're just Jung, 30 minutes. Yeah.
Jung makes his way into quite a few of the Jung Southpaw stories, which I'm quite pleased with. There's one, what if he had been in Guns N' Roses?
What if Carl Jung had been in Guns N' Roses?
And that their first song, instead of being Welcome to the Jungle, was a mispronunciation on everyone's part. And it was actually
Jungle.
Welcome to the Jungle. And then the follow-up story.
Sorry. Yes. Oh, I was just going to say, I think Rangers are getting an idea of what kind of things can be found at youngsouthpaw.bandcamp.com.
Yes. That story is called Young Guns and Roses. And the follow-up is called C.G. Ramone, which postulates what if he had then joined the Ramones?
Wow.
They had so psychotherapy and, you know, mm-hmm. again, Subterranean Jungle, which might have been a mispronunciation, and Ramon's sure. Mania.
Right, right.
All sorts of stuff.
There's a lot of wordplay going on in the Og Stone brain box is what we're learning. And what do you, I mean, okay, there's so many different, I can't, let's take a break. Let's regroup. I'm literally just going to ask another James Bond question, is how many books did Ian Fleming write? And then did he just license it out to other people? Because you mentioned that somebody else wrote his books.
Yeah, it's super interesting. He wrote 12, I believe. And then the 13th was The Man with the Golden Gun, which he died before he could finish. And it's kind of conjectured as to how much he had actually finished and whether someone else, you know, came in to finish it up. And this was, I forget the exact year, but I think it was like 64 when he died.
Oh, wow.
Because he had seen Dr. No. Mm-hmm. Might have been 63, and Dr. No came out in 62. And then in 68, Kingsley Amis, who was a huge Bond fan, who had written a couple books on Bond, you know, British author, he wrote Colonel Sun under the name Robert Markham. And Robert Markham was going to be an umbrella name for different authors to use to do James Bond novels and sort of continue the series forward. And I was actually just looking at this earlier today because somebody else posted a picture of Colonel Sun. And when Skyfall came out like 10 years ago, I wrote a big article about Colonel Sun for The Quietus, which is a great website. I would highly recommend it to everybody. It's called The Curious Case of Colonel Sun. I went deep into the history on that. Because I really love the book, and I was surprised that it had been out of print for so long, but Ian Fleming's wife hated the fact that it was Kingsley Amis who was going to do it. She thought he would get it all wrong, which I don't think he did at all. I think it's a great story.
Okay.
And they sort of picked, so they discontinued this idea to do more Bond novels after Colonel Sun was released until 1981 when John Gardner picked up the series.
Okay.
And then he sort of brought Bond into the 80s. Kingsley Amis did not like John Gardner's novels, though I like them. There's a couple I really like. It's my goal in life to have read all the Bond novels. I stated this, I think, at the beginning of the year that this is one of my goals. And it turns out there's 36, I think, all told with everybody writing them. And I've read 19.
Okay.
And like the 90s ones, I think, are going to be tough.
Oh, right. Yeah. Plowing through different. Yeah.
I read one of them, and it was an American writing. It was Raymond Benson, and I liked it. I was listening to the audiobook of this one, and I liked it, but I didn't think he got Bond entirely right. Like, he makes him a bit too much of a womanizer. Like, within the first chapter, he is, like, asking this Greek military woman to join him in the shower, which James Bond would never do, at least not the Bond of the books.
Right. Would you ever want to write a Bond book?
Yes, I would. And I actually wrote a parody, a few years back. I have it here because I thought it was relevant.
Oh yeah. There this it is. Off License to Kill. That's hilarity. Hilarious.
When I moved to London in 2003 to do some recording, and I absolutely fell in love with London. And then I spent like the next 10 years there, just doing what I can to stay there.
Yeah.
And I was making music at the time. And actually, I brought On Her Majesty's Secret Service over with me on the flight there in September. And I had this copy from the 80s that I remember my grandmother had gotten me. And I, you know, I love the book. And then I'm reading it on the plane. And then like at page 160, I turn it or I look at the opposite page and it's page 170. Like 10 pages have dropped out of my book. And I was like, oh, no. It's like one of the first things I did when I moved to this new country was I went to a Waterstones in Notting Hill Gate and just sat in a chair and read like the 10 missing pages. And then, I mean, I used to be quite a big drinker as the plot of this book is it's the main character is James Vagabond. And he's
there
the star agent of the British Drunken Secret Service.
Nice.
Thank you.
That is awesome.
So that fall in London was very much like an alcohol fest. Like, you know, it's a different culture over there. The pub is just sort of central to everything.
Well, I think it's just alcoholics. If you want to find them, you can go to any country. And because let me tell you about the culture that's in Wisconsin.
Oh.
you could find It's a different culture in Wisconsin. It turns out there's plenty of sober people not living that culture. But if you want to, oh, you could find the culture. Yeah. But so you ended up drinking your way through London for several months?
Several months. And I came back a couple days before Christmas, and I had this idea in my head of, you know, James Vagabond, the British Drunken Secret Service. And it was like the most ridiculous thing I had ever thought of. So I was like, I got to go with this. And I was like, well, what could I have him do? And obviously, and this Bill and Ted's, excuse me, Counter Reeves earlier, popped into my mind. I was like, he should go back in time and stop prohibition from ever happening. And I was like, all right, I got to do this. And I sat down, I got all my old books out and read them, picked up all the DVDs like on eBay and everything, and, you know, watched them all and really researched it. And then in 5 weeks that spring, I just sat there every night after work and banged out a first draft. And then it went through like a bunch of changes. Like, I wrote it as a screenplay at one point, which gave me other ideas. And then when Skyfall came out, I was like, well, you can publish your own books now, like eBooks. Yep. I'm going to go through this one more time and just get it out there because I've had it for years now.
Yeah.
And I went through it, but I ended up rewriting the entire third. I think it's a lot better. I rewrote basically every sentence because I was a much better writer by then.
Well, that's, I mean, and how long had it been since that first draft and the rewrite?
It was 8 years.
Eight years. I mean, even waiting a week, you can see it a new angle on things. It's always good to let a draft sit for a little bit. 8 years might be a little long, but I'm sure it was amazing because your writing got 8 years better.
And like in that time, I had written the screenplay, and I think I had gone over it one more time. And also, that year I quit drinking, so it could have. And I don't think I was an alcoholic. I definitely didn't have a healthy relationship with alcohol. I could.
Right. You were just like, you might have been in your 20s. God knows, right?
Yeah, I was in my early 30s.
Yeah.
And I mean, I could always just drink till the cows come home, like just
huge
quantities of alcohol. So, but like, I don't look back on that time really negatively. I had a lot of fun. So this sort of became this love song to my drinking days. And I threw in like all the ridiculous stuff that I could. And
that's awesome.
I really like it.
That's awesome. That sounds great. Is it available on Amazon or something?
It is. Yeah. It's on all the online outlets.
All the online outlets. And then if people go to augstone.com, they can link to all of your different stuff, obviously, right? You have all the links. That's good. Cause that does sound lovely. I kind of want to read it.
Awesome.
Except for I should probably read. Yes. Yes. And I should read some James Bond maybe. The last series that I read about spies was this woman who wrote, British woman. They made books out of, movies out of like four of her books. She was living through the Blitzkrieg while she was writing a spy novel about just before Britain entered the war. Oh. So her name is Helen McGinnis, I believe. And
that sounds interesting.
Yeah, I think you would. She also wrote some romance novels, but they could not be more sad sack. They are literally the most tragic romance. I mean, people should get together. But but the thing is when you look at what her life was during those during when she was writing. This is a real clock eater, you guys. I'm just Googling something. So it's McInnes. And she had books that were made like, let's see, her, yeah. So like Above Suspicion was made into a film of the same
title. That sounds familiar.
Title. Yeah. Assignment in Brittany was also another film of hers.
Is that about the Free Brittany campaign?
Free Brittany, yeah. It's completely about that.
During the war. Prophecy, that'd be amazing.
Yeah, but the war was sadly Iraq. And and the first Iraq. But she wrote all of these books that were from, and she wrote literally from 1941 to 1976, And the spy novels are kind of fascinating. And her characters are very interesting. She probably has, I think she did the same thing that Ian Fleming was like, I got bills. I think we have a couple of kids here. We got to pay some. And so she was like, you got to turn the page. You got to turn the page. And so I read probably six of those books right before, would have been 27. Yeah, would have been 2015, 2016. And then they got super intense because she was living through World War II, writing about World War II. And she couldn't see the end. And so, you know, when you read books that were written after, it's all, you know who wins. But if you're spending, you know, nights in the dark and sometimes underground in London, things look a little bleak. And you're like, oh, we gotta believe. And there's that sort of feel to it that was kind of amazing in her first three or four books. And then, weirdly enough, I think she got disillusioned after the war by, you know, because there was the fall of the British Empire, you know, the breaking up of the British Empire at that time, and also the Cold War and the Soviet Union. And so her later books become, they're James Bondy in the way that they're super anti-Russian, but they're kind of mean anti-Russian. You're just like, the Russians became the Nazis and the British stayed the British. There was no, you know, they were like, oh no, now the Russians are the Nazis. They're the evildoers. And you're like, well, they weren't great, you know, but the British were nothing to write home about either. You know,
this is interesting because in Colonel Sun, the first, you know, continuation novel, Kingsley Amis made the villain, because this was 1968. And I guess he was kind of thinking that things were thawing between the Russians, and sort of Ian Fleming did this as well. Like towards the later Bond novels, it's that Spectre, which I don't remember what it stands for. But, you know, it's like the society of terrorists, like this international organization, right. Not just like this one country. So he was sort of taking it away from that. And like in Colonel Sun, it's a colonel of the Red Chinese Army thinking that, you know, in the future, China would become, one of the enemies more so than Russia. But then when they started up again in the 80s, it's pretty much strictly Cold War stuff, as we all remember.
And then in the 80s, there was nothing to write home about with the British either, or with the Americans. Like the thing is it was all pretty blurry, right? I mean, the great thing about Nazis is that they are the stormtroopers of society. You can with impunity kill Nazis in a movie, right? Because you're like, oh, they're Nazis. You know, I mean, you think about Indiana Jones,
yeah,
you know, and you're like, oh, that poor guy. Nope. Nazis. I hate these guys. And so it is very hard to make the Russians into that when, I mean, though in the Helen McGinnis books, it feels sort of Red Skull where there's mind control, you know, the Red Room and Black Widow. It feels like the bad guy Russians in Marvel, of course, were the Black Widow. Did you see Black Widow, or have you ever read any of the Black Widow business? Well, let me tell you about the Marvel universe. It is the Black Widow. She was stolen as a child. All girl children were created. They were created to be like these widow spider, you know, kind of things where they were indoctrinated with American accents or British accents. They were watching television. They were also lethal weapons. And then when they turn like 13, they have they're forced hysterectomies so that they can get laid and not get pregnant. And so there's hundreds of these little Black Widow girls who are then sent off into different countries to become the concubines or the whatever of powerful men. And you're like, oh yeah, yeah, those are some bad guys. And so this is, you know, this is a creation of that evil that that nobody cares if that guy dies. Yeah, you can kill that guy. That guy's, so that's the definition of evil over there. What's happening? And so Ian Fleming do that with the Russians? Did he make it very Cold War where they were the bad guys like that?
In the beginning, well, yeah. I mean, obviously, there's From Russia with Love was the second book. But yeah, about halfway
what was the
through.
Plot of that?
Ooh, there was a. I'm going to get the book and film mixed up because it's been a long time. Though I do really like
that
movie.
Yeah. But what was the movie? Yeah. What was
Bond
what do you
is going
remember
to sort of
it?
Seduce an agent to get. There was sort of like a. Each working the other to get some sort of machine, you know, a decrypting machine.
Sure.
It was very. I mean, compared to like, you know, all the bells and whistles of the later films, it was very low tech. And then like Moonraker, right. Which was an early one as well. He was an ex-Nazi. Hugo Drax was the villain. And that's the only one that takes place entirely inside of England because usually they're international and like MI6 is the international arm. So that's right. Why Bond is, you know, traveling outside of the country. And so he had to get special permission to keep the adventure within, you know, the borders of England. Mm-hmm. And I really like Moonraker, the book.
What was the plot of that one?
Hugo Drax, this ex-Nazi, he shows up in England, and I think his face has been reconfigured.
Sure.
He's like a millionaire, and like he's, you know, building this giant rocket, and his new organization is very like pro-Britain. He's going to help, you know, the nation, but he's hired like all these Nazis to help him, and the plan is to launch this rocket, which will, I forget like the final... Oh, they're going to test this rocket, basically, which will help them with whatever. But then he was going to turn it around mid-flight and have it come back down onto London.
And bam!
Like, yeah, Bond and Gallibrand get caught, like, within the, you know, right below the test site, like, in, like, the outer ring. And it's
okay.
Really good. It's really suspenseful.
Oh, that is cool. Because it's, so he was lying that he wasn't actually pro-Britain. He was actually just trying to get
revenge.
Seeking
his revenge, yeah.
All right. Because yeah. I saw an episode. I tried to watch Columbo because I never watched it as a kid.
Me neither. And like my British friends love this. And I really want to like find the time to sit down and get into it because it seems like I would really like it. But please tell me about it.
It did not take, sadly.
Oh!
I know. Bit of a devastation there. But which I should try again. But I was watching it. And but one of the first, because I tried like four or five episodes. I'll read, I'll watch, I'll give it a real college try, right?
Yeah,
Terry Pratchett novels, I didn't like them until I was six in.
Wow.
The Dresden Files, he writes better after the fourth one. And you're just like, you read three books and then it was better? And I was like, yeah, I'll give it a shot.
Yeah.
I'll give it a shot. But so Columbo, I need to watch more. But, and... The character, I think it was the third or fourth one I watched, the character was fascinating because he was a German jeweler. And I was like, oh, that guy's probably a Nazi. It's the 70s and he's age appropriate and he's a bad guy. And and it turns out he was one of the hiding Nazi people, right? Where the, you know, the Israelis were constantly trying to root him out because they just tried to slide back into society, except for the ones that... all the Western governments hired to be part of their think tanks. But like the guards and stuff, like just normal citizens who just murdered a bunch of people. The Israelis were like, no, we're going to find those guys. And we know that you kept the scientists and the smart guys. Yeah. All right, fine. But we're just going to go find a bunch of the murderer types. And which I always thought was an interesting delineation on their part. Good for all right. So you think if I were to read a first James Bond novel, should I read Casino Royale or should I go to a different one?
No, Casino Royale is it's a lot darker and heavy, like he is much more sadistic in it. And he actually toned the character down after that to make him more widely readable. I really like Moonraker. It's a good start. The thing about Honor Majesty's Secret Service, which is my favorite and I think is widely regarded as the favorite, is it's great, but it's very much sort of like the end of the particular Ian Fleming saga of him. So like, I'm not going to tell you what happens at the end, but there's a big thing that would, you would probably want a few Bond books under your belt before that. But I can't recommend that one enough.
And what movie would you recommend I watch first?
Sorry. Well, actually, that kind Sorry, what ones have you seen?
Well, I've seen parts of ones where he skis out of airplanes, and you know, I can't remember any of the ones except for the sort of the ridiculous kind of situations where. But the one that I saw that I liked was Casino Royale.
Yeah, that was great. They did such a good job with that.
I own that DVD. That's a weird, I was like, oh, I guess I'm this person now. And because that's how much I like that movie. So,
well, it's weird because my favorite film, and I love it, is Honor Majesty's Secret Service. And that's just going to ruin the plot for you anyway with the book. So maybe read a book before you watch that one. But it is, I mean, it's got Diana Rigg in it as the Bond girl who, you know, I absolutely adore.
Sure, I could hear it in your voice.
Yeah, I'm the Avengers. So,
sure. I think I saw Thunderball.
Yeah, that's a good one. Goldfinger's really good for Connery one. It's very 60s.
Okay.
I really like The Man with the Golden Gun. Again, it's lots of one-liners from Roger Moore, but I like that. It's got Christopher Lee and Hervé Villechaize.
Diamonds Are Forever?
Diamonds Are Forever isn't great. It's good, but it's not one of the best ones. Great theme song.
Oh, okay. All right. And Dr. No was just...
Dr. No's good. I like Dr. No.
Okay. All right. So there's a bunch of them. I'm looking... I actually pulled up a list, and I haven't seen one since... Like, I think I might have seen Quantum of Solace and not liked it.
I don't know why that movie was made. I can't remember like there being any real point to it. But then like Skyfall is great.
Skyfall's great?
Yeah, I love Skyfall. Oh, yeah.
How was Spectre or No Time to Die?
No Time to Die is the one coming up.
Okay.
Spectre, I really enjoyed. People I went with didn't like it. But Skyfall was great. And I got to see it in Sony's private theater in London. Because I was writing
that's
for the
dream come true. Yeah,
so like it was perfect. Like I was writing for The Quietest. I mean, I still wrote for The Quietest, but I just sort of started, and I'd written that thing about Colonel Sun, and their film editor just called me up one day and was like, "Hey, you do anything this afternoon? You want to go to Sony's private theater and watch the new Bond film a month before anyone else can see it?" I was like, "Yes!" Like, and it was the seats were so comfortable, and it was just awesome.
That is so cool.
Yeah. The Living Daylights I would recommend as well. I like Timothy Dalton. People thought he was a bit too serious maybe. And like the next movie he did was a bit too serious. But The Living Daylights was the first one I saw in the theater. My dad took me to see it. And I like that a lot. I mean, Dalton was a good Bond.
Yeah. Okay. So he solved that. So that was good. Well, I have to say that that you've kind of inspired me to kind of want to do it. Because it's I'm always... I am currently reading a variety of things, but the fiction that I've been reading has been the Miss Fisher's Murder Mysteries, which is an Australian private eye set in 1928. Okay. And the thing about Phryne Fisher is she's good at everything. She is literally... If she were a Dungeons and Dragons character, she would be a Max character. She's good at, she's beautiful, she's rich, she has a gold-plated gun, she can ride horses, she can fly airplanes, she's an acrobat. And she's always on the right side of history. So I freaking love these books. And the TV show was actually quite good too, but the books are slightly different and more intense. Like the two that I just finished were, they literally go into depth about the immigration of Chinese people during the Australian Gold Rush And you're like, ooh, fascinating, which also happened around 1849, okay. Which is when the U.S. gold rush was. And weirdly enough, a bunch of gold was found all over this planet around the same time. And and the Chinese came to America, but they also went to Australia. And very, very exciting. And so, but I think it's always nice to mix them up, right? The sort of the pulp. And I'm never using that term right. I know Todd Mason, who listens to The Dork Forest, that I don't think I'm using that term right. But it is, there's a lot of them. And I think of it as pulp because they churn them out. But I would like to read some James Bond books. So thank you so much.
Oh, let me know what you think. I love them. And yeah. Bond is much more human in the books. Like, he doesn't know everything. He's not super rich. I mean, he has money from the service that he has to get permission to use, but he purposely keeps himself on a lower income because he thinks that's the way it should be. Like, you shouldn't be have everything at your disposal. It okay. sort of makes you a tougher character to have to, you know, get out there and earn it and fight for it.
Oh,
all and he
right.
does have to, you know, he's not superhuman like in the movies. He does have to learn stuff.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Oh, see, and that's yeah, the movies, they tend to gloss over a lot of stuff. So yeah, the books are often better. Though I understand that was quite different between the book Jaws and the movie Jaws. That the movie was better than the book.
Really? Do you know the story about Jaws 2?
I don't.
In the French translation of Jaws is Dents de la Mer, Teeth of the Sea.
Mm-hmm.
And then 2 in French is de. So when Jaws 2 came out, it was Dents de la Merde. But merde is shit.
Is shit.
Yeah. So they had to change the name. I love that.
Yeah. That is ridiculous. You guys, Og Stone, if you like what is clearly a celebration of the English language, you should go to ogstone.com. You should go to youngsouthpaw.com. You should go to youngsouthpaw.bandcamp.com. You should listen to his podcast, which has the words Young Southpaw and Part of an Hour in it.
Does. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, he's not wrong. Anyway, thank you so much for doing the show, Og.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a lot of fun.
And Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat, my hat, my hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat, my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?